I'd like to welcome everyone to Spotlight. Spotlight for the new members here is a program in which we interview one of our FTP members, and we have a really faithful and dedicated member today we're going to interview. First, I'd like to thank Dennis for his time and expertise in recording our Spotlight programs for us, and remind everyone that there are archives of our Spotlight programs available for your listening convenience by going to the front page and clicking on the Galaxy of Stars link, and in there you'll find a link for Spotlight. Before we get started, also, I'd like to remind everyone to hold your questions and comments for our guests until the end of the interview. And, of course, remind everyone that text messaging is not permitted in this room. So with that said, I'll turn it over to Mr. Steve Shepherd to interview and introduce his guest for today. Steve?
Well, thank you, Becky. I appreciate it. And thanks, everyone, for joining us on Spotlight. And today we are happy and privileged to have with us Mr. Wildchild. Dave, nice to have you, and thanks for coming.
Well, Steve, it's been my pleasure to be able to come here.
Now, Dave, the first question I have for you is, what gave you the idea for the nickname Wild Child?
Well, when I came onto the Internet, I tried several nicks. One was that I started on was a wind splitter, which is actually the name of an old steam engine. Unfortunately, they took wind splitter to mean something else. So I decided that maybe I'd try Diamond Jim. Well, unfortunately, it was too long, and I had to shorten it to Diamond J. So having Diamond in the front, everybody was surprised when they found out I was male and not female. So I shortened it to DJ. Well, then we ended up in a room where they had DJ, CJ, and what have you, and finally I decided to come up with something that was kind of different, and I remembered someone who once had this nick, and since he was sighted, not likely to be on any sites I'd be on, I stole it from him. And that's how I became Wild Child.
Okay, very good. That's a Wild Child, so let's start from the beginning. Where were you born? Possibly when were you born? How did all that come about?
Well, a while after I was a gleam in my father's eye, I was born in this little log cabin. No, only teasing. I was born in 1940, June 17th, in the state of Connecticut here.
Okay, and you're in Connecticut now. I think you've been in Connecticut most of your life, but let's go on from there. How about your family? Dave, do you have a big one? What are some details about that?
Well, I'm an only child, which only proves that my mother and father weren't gamblers. At the same time, my father had two brothers and a sister. And my mother had a sister and a brother. And my side of the family here is not all that large. My father's side of the family came from Sweden. And on my mother's side, my grandmother came from Germany. My grandfather came from Austria.
Okay. A lot of people I've been interviewing have were blind from birth. I think you're an exception there. You were born with good vision, correct?
Yes, I was fortunate to be born very healthy and with 20/20 vision in both eyes. I grew up having pretty much a normal childhood. Probably a little better than normal. My father had a good job, and being an only child, I didn't have to share toys with others. I kind of got everything. And I was lucky enough to live in a neighborhood here, which I'm still in, where it was quite unique, I think, back in those days.
Wow, you're still in the same neighborhood you grew up in. That's unusual. Huh, okay. How about your schooling years, Dave? Tell us about that.
Well, I went to grammar school. Of course, we had no middle school back then. And the school is located about 5 blocks from where I am. You pretty much walked there, or if you had a bicycle, you rode your bicycle down there. We didn't have the traffic like we do now, and riding bicycles is the way most of the kids got around. As far as the neighborhood, pretty much made up of people at that time who were here second, third generation. Everybody knew just about everybody, small town type situation. And there were 5 or 6 of us kids that lived here in the neighborhood we went to school together. A few of us were in the same grade, a few were in a grade behind. And we had quite a unique area here. My father's place, which I'm living in here now, the old homestead, it's about 4 acres of land. We have about 3/4 of an acre that's underwater. It's a shallow mud pond. And back then, it was a great place to go fishing and, well, build tree forts and what have you. And my father bought a used rowboat and put it down there. And of course, as young kids, that became anything we wanted to be, you know, from an ocean liner to a pirate boat. And in the winter, it made an excellent skating pond. And it wasn't unusual on a good day to see, 200-300 people skating on it. Across the street is an open lot, and that was our baseball and football field to play in. And the far side of the lot had a hill that went up, and that was excellent for sliding in the winter. The lot also was big enough that it was clear of trees in the center, and it's a great area to fly some homemade kites that are parents made for us. I went to 8th grade, which I graduated in 1955, and in 1955 the town suffered its worst flood ever. The water literally did a tremendous amount of damage to the town. We lost houses and roads, and there were a couple hundred houses that were underwater, and we lost our library, all except for the foundation, and the high school had water onto the second floor and had part of the building damaged. So that year they quickly converted one of the grammar schools into a high school, and I spent my freshman year going there. My last 3 years I went to a private trade school in the city next to us, which was affiliated with the city, and I graduated from the trade school.
Okay. Boy, the child in me is excited. What a neat place to grow up in. A pond you could boat in and skate on and have all your recreation right there across the street. How neat. Okay. That's quite a flood. Now, what trade did you take up in trade school, Dave?
Well, I had originally tried to get into the state trade school because I wanted to be an electrician. But all the slots were taken. And this trade school didn't offer that. They offered auto mechanics, machine shop, woodworking, printing, and drafting. They also had a class for cooking, which I found out was only for the girls. I wanted to be part of it. I tried to talk them into the fact that I'd like to be a chef, but somehow they decided that the boys should not be part of that class since it was for girls only. So I decided to be a draftsman.
Boy, that wouldn't happen today. No boys allowed in the cooking class. That's interesting. So that's about 1958, I guess, that you graduated there, right?
I graduated in 1959.
Okay. And then the United States military got to know you.
That's right. Of course, back then we had the draft, and we had to sign up. And so I decided that when I came out of high school that I would sign up for the Army and get my obligation over with. I wouldn't have to worry about being drafted. You know, get a good job and be drafted. And I figured this was a golden opportunity to maybe see a little bit of the world. So I signed up, and 17 days after graduation, I was the property of Uncle Sam. I went to Fort Dix in New Jersey, where I took my basic, and then I got my orders to go to Battery D Nike site, Cromwell, Connecticut, 40 miles from home.
Okay. Now, did you use your drafting degree in the service?
Actually, my drafting did not. I never did use it, oddly enough, in the service. And I spent 3 years there, so I didn't get to travel that much. But I was a launcher crewman when I first came in. One of the reasons that I got sent there was that I was able to get a security clearance rather quickly. In order to be on that base, you had to be get a security clearance through the FBI. But you have to remember, back in that day, those missiles were the very latest technology out there. There was no better missiles than those. I was a launcher crewman, and I learned all the different positions of a launcher crewman, including panel operator. Later, I went up to motor pool, and I worked in motor pool for a while. And I did a temporary time for 2 months when one of the cooks that was supposed to show up took a leave, unsuspected, and the old cook left. So, being there's two cooks on each time, and I was given the opportunity to be second cook in the mess hall for 2 months, which was a temporary thing. After that, I went back to the launcher area, and had the opportunity to become part of permanent guard. We were dismantling the site from the missiles that we had and going to a new missile, and the security was being increased. And the permanent guard wasn't too bad because you had 2 days on and 2 days off. And the 2 days off were guaranteed. You didn't have to stick around. So I figured working 50% of the time wasn't bad.
Now, you said you were able to get a security clearance quickly. How come?
Well, see, I didn't move around. The family was here in Seymour for the longest time. And it was very easy for the FBI to trace the family because we basically didn't move anywhere. And they were able to go to the chief of police, which knew my family personally and me, and the neighbors, which had been here for several generations, they knew the family. It wasn't difficult for the FBI to do a background check on me. Others might have moved 4 or 5 times to 3 states, in which case the FBI took much longer to be able to track their backgrounds.
I see. Now, were these Minutemen missiles you're talking about, launch crew?
Well, these were called Nikes, Nike missiles. And then they went to, I believe it was Herc's. Oddly enough, though, if I go back a little bit, I know when I came home, walked in the door, and this was on the weekend, and the first thing my mother said was, "Are you in trouble?" And I said, "No, why?" She says, "Do you realize that the FBI was next door to so-and-so's asking about you?" And I had to explain to my mother that I was being investigated for my security clearance.
I can well imagine that would be disconcerting for just about any mother. That's kind of funny. Okay, well, that's interesting that you were part of our nuclear deterrent there, Dave. I didn't know that. And you must have learned a lot of interesting things during that time.
Well, the Nike sites were part of what they called the Do Line. And as we were led to understand that if there would be a 10 attack, the shortest route possible would be over Canada, and we were the first line of defense because we had no long-range missiles. These missiles had a 50-mile range. That was it. And we had the very latest and best missiles available. They were a missile that would be fired, and you had 2 radars, one locked onto the missile, one locked onto the target. And the computer would continually project an intercept point. And you didn't fire the missile until the plane was within range, and with the speed of the missile, the plane could not make a U-turn and get out of the area before the missile would hit it. And that was the basically it. Connecticut here had quite a few Nike sites, but then we have a lot here. We had Sikorsky aircraft. We had several aircraft engine companies here. You had the sub base and so on. And so consequently, they were here to protect the industry in this area as well as other areas.
Okay, very interesting. Boy, technology really changed right around that time. It was at time of real generational change regarding technology. Interesting. Okay, well, what other magnificent events happened to you, Mr. Wildchild, while you were in the service?
Well, my intentions were that when I came out of the service to go to school and become an electrician, but something kind of fell in the way called love. I went out on my first blind date ever, and 6 months before leaving the service, I got married.
Okay, so now Dave Carlson is a tradesman and a vet, a military vet, and out of the service. And I think it's about 1962, right? Now what?
Well, as I say, I got married to a lovely lady called Adriana. And at that time, she was an Italian citizen. She came to this country when she was 10 years old. And, when I came out, I went to work for a street department. The driver, because quite honestly, I could get a job as a draftsman, but a truck driver made $25 a week more. And being married, I had responsibilities. And so I went to being a truck driver. And I worked there for a little over a year. But the requirements back then were, if you worked for the town, you had to live within the town. And Orange, which was the town I was working in, is known for its, let's say, upper class. And it's kind of a rich town, and not very many apartments in that town. So we weren't able to find an apartment, and so I left there, and I went on to work for the American Brass Company. And right about that time, my wife was expecting.
Okay, neat. Okay, of course that was back when the word pregnant was not used. I guess that's why you said that, right? Well, that's good. What happened there, Dave?
Well, things didn't go as well as we would like to hope. Unfortunately, my wife went the entire 9 months, and we had a stillborn. Unfortunately, and it was a boy, but it was pretty hard on my wife being Italian, one of 10 children. She was used to a big family, and it hit her pretty hard. Unfortunately, she had a family doctor who should have never got a license. He came back and told us that she shouldn't have any more children. And so we applied to adopt. And as I say, we were getting over that. And in the meantime, by accident, maybe the good Lord stepped in for us and tried to help us, a doctor that took his place while he was on vacation, we saw him, and we switched to him. Fortunately, we found an excellent doctor, and we found out there was no reason why the wife couldn't have children, and so it wasn't long after that she was pregnant again. This time, though, she delivered a baby boy.
Okay, well, I'm glad a tragedy you could get over well enough and then get the proper medical advice, and so you had a boy. Well, so that was what year?
That was in 1966. And then 3 years later, my daughter showed up.
Oh, okay. So no only children for this family.
Nope. A year later, a hysterectomy showed up, and that was the end of kids.
Okay. Well, so as we were talking last night, you told me lots of different things that you had done during this time. You were very active civically. I think you were in the fire department, and tell us a little bit about that area of your life, Dave.
Well, I've always liked helping people, and I was always interested. I started out at the age of 15 being on a state forest fire crew under a fire warden who happened to be the father of a good buddy of mine. I was supposed to be 16, but I lied about my age. Anyways, so I started out on a forest fire crew, and while I was in high school, civil defense became popular, and the chief of police was very instrumental in getting a auxiliary fire unit in civil defense put together, of which I'm a charter member. And so the forest fire crew ended up becoming part of civil defense and its auxiliary fire. And so I belong to the Soil Defense Unit in Seymour. When I came out of the service, though, I wasn't living in Seymour, and so I dropped my membership from Soil Defense because not being in town. And I was living in the city of Ansonia. Around the corner from me was the Webster Hose. And so a few of the people there were fellas that I had gone to school with, and lo and behold, I became a member of the Webster Hose Fire Company, which was part of Ansonia. A while later, being a CB-er, we had a club that formed in the valley, and I became a member of the CB club. And from there, we were holding our meetings over at Derby Soil Defense. And the director over there enticed me into becoming a member of the Derby Soil Defense. When I did leave that unit, I left it as its deputy director about some 10 years later. At about the same time, I also left the Webster Hose and became a affiliate member because I had moved to Seymour. And in my process of moving to Seymour, I joined the Citizens Engine Company. And there, I ended up going on to fire police. And when I lost my eyesight, I was captain of fire police.
Interesting. Now, this was all volunteer. I was captain of fire police and deputy director of civil defense. Is all that volunteer?
Yes, that was all volunteer. Our entire valley is made up of volunteer fire departments, and we have a mutual aid plan where we help each other out. And the only ones that do get any funds are the chiefs, and they usually get like $200 or $300 a year, which goes again for them to pay for gas and so forth, because they utilize their cars to go to the scenes. They have red light and siren. They're authorized a red light and a siren. I was in Soil Defense as deputy director. I also had a red light and a siren, and of course two radios in the car and truck I had. At the Webster Hose, I was a driver and chairman of the House committee. And when I joined Seymour, though, I decided that to go on the fire police because they needed some people there. And that was the reason I went to that. And a good friend of mine, who was up in years, wanted me to take over because, well, I didn't realize at the time, but he wanted me to take over his spot as captain.
Okay, very good. You were obviously a part of the very important functions of people that made this country great. And, well, I appreciate it, Dave, very much. I'm appreciating you more and more. You're a good friend of mine and of the site, and it's good to learn these things about you. Now, when did you go blind, Dave?
Well, let me go back to my working. When I left the town of Orange, I went to work for the American Brass, which was in Ansonia, and I worked in the sheet metal shop in third shift. Unfortunately, I had a relative that was working in the office, and I learned early on that the sheet metal shop was going to be shut down. And because I didn't have very much seniority, I would be laid off, and so I took a voluntary layoff after 13 months working there. And went to work for a chemical company called Axon Cross that delivered chemicals, and once again went back to driving. I drove trailer truck and drove box delivering, and I drove tanker. I'd been there for some 2 years when I was delivering what was supposed to be some bleach one day to a small laundry, and I was transferring the bleach from one of the company's containers to theirs. As I started to pour it, I realized it wasn't bleach, and as I set it down, it sloshed, and I got some of it into my left eye. The end result was it scarred my eye. Turned out the bleach was liquid caustic.
Sorry, I'm having trouble getting the key. I hope you can hear me. Yeah, and caustic is an industrial cleaner. Very corrosive for dirt on metal. And, of course, very corrosive for the eye. And so how did that affect your life, Dave?
Well, I wasn't able to be driving trailer because the company did go interstate, and I could not get an interstate book. So I went inside and drove tow motor for them. And I worked there for another 3 years, and then they were making the move. And at the same time, I realized that they were downsizing because there were other chemical companies that were beating their prices, and I saw them as not a good idea to stay with. It was a good choice because it wasn't too long after they moved that they closed up altogether in Connecticut. So from there, I went to got a job working for a construction company as a driver and an operator.
Okay, and what kind of machinery did you operate?
Well, I worked there for some 17 and a half years, and during that time I drove everything from a pickup truck to a triaxle to tractor trailer. I specialized in moving the equipment, and with the tractor trailer lowboy I had, I specialized in over-width loads, overweight, over-height. We had a Bryce Erie backhoe on tracks that I moved, and my gross weight was the most that the biggest one I had, and that was 128,000 pounds. And you had to move by permit only. I also operated anything from a backhoe to a bulldozer to a crane to a forklift with a 5-story lift. Pretty much you name it, I operated it. About a year and a half, though, before I left the company, the state changed their rules, and because I was blind in one eye, I wasn't able to drive locally anymore. And so I went in to the company as a purchasing agent. One of the vice presidents for the company was acting as the purchasing agent for all the yard materials, which included anything from 2x4s to diamond blades to hand drills and what have you, to nails and so forth that would go out onto the job site, not be sent directly there. And so for about a year and a half, I was a purchasing agent. And then they got a new general super in who was going to revolutionize the company. And one of the first things he did was he started getting rid of all the non-union guys. And I was one of the first to get laid off.
Okay. That must have been difficult for you, Dave. And all this time, too, you were doing your own printing company. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, yeah. I always, in my earlier days, I worked also, when I was working the American Brass, I was also driving school bus and always working a second job. And I got playing around with a hand press and some hand type, and well, it started, I got from there, I went to power press and so forth, and Cobblestone Printery was born, and I operated out of my father's house, which is where I'm at now, out of the cellar, and it just grew and grew and grew as a part-time business. And so when I left the construction company, my wife was working, and so I decided that I would take the print shop and go full-time with it. And so I went full-time with it, and shortly after that, my wife became injured, and she hasn't worked since then. She's on a disability. Things were going along fairly good, and of course, the house here I was living in was my mother's, and my mother was still alive. Of course, I was paying all the bills, and then my mother broke her leg and went in the hospital, came back out, came home, and she ended up buying a wheelchair to get around the house in, which was a big mistake because she didn't walk that much. She was told that she should walk in that. And my mother also had cancer. And the cancer started to act up, and she went back to the hospital. They sent her from there to a nursing home. And when it came time for her to come back home, well, she had lost pretty much the use of her leg. She couldn't stand up on her own, which meant she couldn't transfer from the bed to a wheelchair or anything else. And they decided that it would be unsafe for her to come home. I should say that back up a little bit here, because back in 95, I had a blood clot that hit my right eye, and I became blind, which closed the print shop. And it was right after this that we had the problem with my mother. And because I was blind and my wife was handicapped, neither one of us could take care of her. And so, as I say, the print shop came to an end, and my mother was put into a home, and pretty much that was it.
Okay. Not an easy thing, but you have a lot of life so very well. Dave, what got you into computers as a hobby?
Well, getting into computers wasn't so much of a hobby. The print shop, I started out with a computer because I could do accounting on it and stuff like that. And then computers started coming to where you could do typesetting on them. And I had a program called PageMaker and a couple other ones. And because I had photo typesetting equipment here, but it was strictly text, and you couldn't do too much with it other than just set straight text, even though the unit cost $14,000. But computers were getting to where they could set text, and you could manipulate text, and this was right up my alley because I did my own typesetting. And so the computer was a very important part of the print shop.
I see. Okay. All right. Well, that brings us up to about the late 90s. Wild Child, when did you, when computer actually become part of your recreation, and how did that lead to For the People?
Well, I should say that during, just before I lost my eyesight, my daughter got married, and that took place before I lost my eyesight. And when I lost my eyesight, I closed the print shop up. It was kind of a blow, because it wasn't like you lose your eyesight gradually. I was seeing 20/20, and 3 minutes later, I was seeing absolutely nothing. Went that quick. I went through a bit of depression, as everybody would. I found myself in a hole and decided to climb out a bit. And I went to the State Department for the Blind, and they came out. And since I had a computer here, they put JAWS on it, and they put Vocalize on it, which was a DOS-based screen reader. And they set me up with a person who, a blind person, who taught me the proper way to type on the keyboard and how to use JAWS and a few other programs, and got me started. And that's how it started with this. I found my way onto the internet, and I went into some text chat areas, and the long and short of it is I eventually wound up here on For the People. During that time, though, my daughter blessed the family with a son, and I'm now a grandfather. My have a Timmy, who is 5 years old, who makes Dennis the Menace look like a choir boy. But other than that, he's a wonderful boy, smart as a whip. Sometimes I think too smart for his age, but oh well. As I tell my daughter, it's time for payback. You know, this is where Grandma and Grandpa get to play with him all day long, and when he gets cranky and tired and that, we send him home with his mother.
Oh yeah, that's great. I love it. Okay, well, Wild Child, you said you were afraid it wouldn't be a very interesting interview. I think it's been a very interesting interview, and you have a very interesting, I think there may be lots of questions, so I'd like to open up to anyone who might have questions now. Thank you so much, Dave, for joining us. And now, anyone has questions, speak up.
I just want to give a great big thank you to Dave. He was a wonderful help to me at our party a couple weeks ago. He's chairperson of the fundraising committee, has accepted chairperson of the Future Peeps Party, and a really great friend. We had a wonderful time visiting in person. Thank you, Dave.
Well, I assure you, Jennifer, the pleasure was all mine. I think that For the People here is an awful great place, family, and group. It's number one on the internet. It is for me, anyways. And that party was just one great time for me, because I got to meet a lot of people in person that I talked to on here, such as Steve, you know, and he brought along the drunk with him. oh, sorry, Steve. Tell Hallie I apologize. I teased her on that. But anyways, I got to meet an awful lot of people, and it was really my pleasure to be able to be there, and I look forward to the next one.
Okay, I have a poor connection. I hope y'all can hear me. All right, well, such a varied, rich life of Dave. Anyone have any questions?
If I can only introduce just one thing, or two things here, is and that... next month I'll be 63, and September 30th will be my 42nd wedding anniversary. Still married to the very same woman from the beginning. And all I can say is, she told me, she said, you can look all you want, just don't touch. And all these years I've honored that. I've looked a lot, but never touched. And all I can say is that I'm still in love with her as much as I was the day I met her, and I will be till the end of time.
Hey, Dave, do you have any hobbies, and what kind are they?
Hobbies? Well, yeah, I got a hobby. Actually, it's one that started with my grandfather. My father was out traveling, and his brother was a salesman for General Electric, so, and their father liked a good bottle of beer, so traveling from state to state, they saw a bottle of beer that wasn't available around here. They'd bring it home and for their father. Well, one day they happened to look up in the attic, and he had a box there with about 18 bottles in it. He wasn't drinking them. He was saving them. So they decided after that they'd have to buy two bottles. One he could keep as a souvenir and one he could drink. Well, by the time he passed away, there was over 100 bottles. And my father's older brother, he did nothing. He didn't care for alcohol at all. He wasn't a drinker. His younger brother by that time was an alcoholic. So my father took the bottles, and at that time we lived up in another house, which belonged to my mother's parents, and he made some shelves, put them on there, and he started adding to them. And then when he moved down to the house here, which was his mother's house, that he bought from her, and in fact my grandmother passed away in this house, although he bought it, she stayed here with us. And so he made a little room which still exists, and the bottles on the shelf and that, and he continued to add to them. And then I got interested in it, and I started adding to them. And of course, when my father passed away, I continued, and my son now is taking an interest in adding to them. And now we have a little over 700 bottles of beer. They're all full, never been opened, and some of them go back to before Prohibition.
You've overcome a lot of challenges in your life. You've been pretty creative in starting up a new business and whatnot. Do you have any intentions or desires to becoming a small business entrepreneur? And if so, what areas are you looking at?
Well, I got to be honest with you, I'm going to be 63 years old. My health is not the greatest. At this point, I think that I'm ready for retirement, to stay retired. I enjoyed having Cobblestone Printery. I enjoyed having a business where I was the boss. The truth of the matter is your customers are the boss, because without them you don't have a business, and you learn that you have to cater to them. But I didn't have somebody over my head telling me when I could come in and when I had to go out. And I really enjoyed having the business. But I got to be honest with you, I'm starting to feel my age, and I don't think that at this point I really want to go into a business again.
Dave, I just want to thank you so much for being with us and being under the spotlight today. It will be archived very soon, and you can listen to it again. Go ahead, Becky.
Thank you, Steve. I'm sorry, I was also having trouble getting the key. Really great interview, Dave. I enjoyed that. It was super, and another good job from Steve as well. And we invite everyone to join us next Saturday when we'll have another one of our very good members in the spotlight.
Well, it was my pleasure to be able to be here. I was hoping I wouldn't be too boring compared to many who have been on here. My life has been a relatively dull one, but I've enjoyed it. I've had a good woman and pretty much a good life, and so I don't think I'd change much if there was the opportunity to do so. So I thank you for the opportunity to be able to be on here.